Good morning to the first episode of our podcast in 2021 at 9 a.m. local time. And I think it is the earliest recording I have ever had since I started the podcast. Astrid, can you remember a recording that was before 9 a.m.?
Not really, not at this time zone. So it's quite early, but it's okay. You
know? Yeah, yeah. How do they say in English? Isn't it the early bird
catches the worm?
Yeah, and I think there are a lot of iterations where some people are not so happy. But I think 9 a.m. is a very, very good start into the day. And we had our last recording shortly before Christmas. It was a review of 2020. So what happened in 2020? We had many speakers from our past recordings. But I think we missed one of the most important topics for entrepreneurs. It's the tax situation. And I think it doesn't matter where you found the company. One of the most important things is to understand how the tax system works. On one hand, it can be beneficial for companies. And on the other hand, it's also good to understand which pitfalls to avoid. And perfect start into the year with the tax topic. And I'm very happy today to have one of our sponsors in this podcast episode. It's KPMG Austria. And KPMG supported the Life Science Get-Together since its beginning in 2017. We had our partner meetings at the premises of KPMG. We had last year our first, tax update in real life. It was a very, very pleasant meeting with more than 100 guests at the premises of KPMG. And I'm very happy today to also have our colleagues here from KPMG Austria. Welcome to the show, Michael Klebern and Oliver Mavia. Yeah.
Good morning. Hello. Thanks for having us.
Good to see you. Good to see you as early as it can be.
Happy New Year too.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Yeah, to us.
About Happy New Year, how was your New Year's Eve, Michael? What did you do?
Not so much this year. Or completely a different story than the previous years. Mm-hmm. Normally, I used to stay with the family of my wife at the in Bulgaria, at the seaside. And this year it was in Vienna. Celebrated in a very small arrangement with the family, but it was nice, it was calm. It was different, but it was okay. So 2020 was different, and it also ended differently than all the other years before.
That's for sure. Oliver, what did you do New Year's Eve?
Our Christmas holidays as well as New Year's Eve were relatively calm. Yeah. The problem was a new lockdown beginning of the 26th of December. Yeah. We were at the home of the family of my wife. They are located in Salzburg in St. Johann in Pongau. Yeah. It was a pleasure to be there on the countryside. Yeah. Especially because I have a small daughter. Yeah. She's 2.5 years old. Yeah. And it was the first Christmas, which was very nice for her. Yeah. Because she now realizes everything. Yeah. Realizes everything. But it was so calm because we all know why. The nasty word which starts with C, and also New Year's Eve was something a little bit different this year,
I like this, the little word that starts, this nasty word that starts with C. Astrid, how was your, how were your holidays?
Not too bad. I mean, usually filled with work in any event because we're very, very busy at our fund at the moment. But yeah, no, we actually had an alternative to lead melting, you know, this tradition in Austria where you basically lead melt. This time we had wax. We melted wax and actually looked at all the figures that, you know, and where you can cast or sort of interpret something into it and how the future could be. So it's a fun thing, especially with kids. And it theoretically told us that 2021 should be better than 2020. So let's see about that.
Definitely it will be better. That's already, I mean, at least at the stock market, it started very well. So huge gains.
Oh, yeah. Also the crypto markets. Mm. So we are obviously very happy because we're investing in blockchain and tokens fund. So we've seen this high of Bitcoin. It basically also went through all the other different coins that are out there. So it looks like a very exciting year. So we'll see how, you know, regulation will also pan out this year and increased adoption in this field. I'm really looking forward to that this year.
Yeah, me too. I enjoy the run of Bitcoin. And I think it's a good hook point to get back to the tax consequences of investments and running businesses. Let's do a little recap at the beginning of 2020. It was an extraordinary year. And I think we have today the opportunity to talk with Michael and Oliver, who oversee in their roles the entire Austrian economy, to hear a little bit more about their perception of 2020.
Well, let me introduce first myself a little bit and what I'm doing. I think that's good. My home base is audit. So that's where I started from 20 years ago. And I'm doing that for these 20 years, and that the benefit of doing that audit is that you get into touch with different companies, different types of business, and so you have a pretty good overview about what happened. So in 2020, what I observed was it was a pretty good start in 2020, even with our event in February. Everything was quite well on track. And our main concern was back then if the hurricane which came across from Western Europe will also affect the event. And nobody talked so much about COVID because it was so far away. And suddenly in March, the situation changed completely. And I found myself in home office, which I didn't experience in the past. It was completely new to me that I spent most of the time at home, in combination with the whole family. And I think that situation is something that most of us experienced during these days, that suddenly the normal way of business life changed and we had to rearrange it from back home. And,
now, this was definitely one of the remarkable points in 2020 that we saw a huge shift to home offices. I'm quite familiar with working from home as a consultant in the life science industry, but I think for many companies, it changed tremendously. Oliver, how was it for you? I mean, it looks very nice at your home, so it's very cozy.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, we moved to the suburbs of Vienna. It was very challenging, but now because it's cozy, now I'm more fine with that I'm in home office. Yeah. Some words to my profession here at KPMG. So, maybe I can also give you some touch points, which, we will discuss later. So I'm a tax advisor and senior tax manager at KPMG, and I'm a certified tax advisor and mainly focusing on international and national tax law. But in the last years, I've also focusing on SMEs, especially startups, and also digital transformation in the accounting and bookkeeping sector. And also, big part of my Focus is also funding, yeah. So the tax R&D premium we will discuss later, mm-hmm. As well as national fundings and EU fundings. And now in the last months, unfortunately, also the COVID-19 aids and fundings. That was very, very important. Let's start with that. Like, because Michael Gehmann also said, yeah, the working world has changed, mm-hmm. I think, a little bit, because we were obliged now to work from home. Yeah. Some of us lost their job and have to work on short time work. So the companies had also to reshape their processes, mm-hmm. The crisis was a catalyst for the digital transformation, so to say. For instance, now we use video conferencing solutions like Zoom. I think it's especially these tech companies profited from these circumstances on the other hand. Yeah. So on the one hand side, there were challenging times for some companies, but on the other hand side, there are like branches, they profit of the crisis, yeah.
That's absolutely true. I mean, when you look on the stock market, which companies are soaring, it's definitely the digital part. I mean, we have with you two tax experts, and mm-hmm. there was one point in the last year I always wondered about mm-hmm. this home office movement. When I remember the times before 2020, the tax authorities seemed to be, let's say, very rigid in accepting a lot of digital stuff as expenses for employees. For example, a computer, you can use it privately, so there is no reason to use it professionally. Mm-hmm. Also, headsets, you can use it for gaming or microphones. Yeah. For Twitch, for example, it's also for pleasure. But now with the home office movement, many people had to invest a tremendous amount of money to brush up their equipment, to laptops, to computers, to cameras and stuff like that. How does the tax authority see investments from private people and from small companies into such assets? Did anything change, or is it still the same that you can't use it? It's tax deductible.
Now at the moment it's quite the same, yeah. But I think in the next years when you have to invest more into the infrastructure at home and it's not paid by your employer, for instance, I think they have to amend on the one hand side the regulations with new laws, maybe. Also, there's also the discussion if home working should be a right for an employee, mm-hmm. for instance, mm-hmm. then there have to be like some also like easements to deduct this kind of investments which you made to work at home, yeah. But now it's the same, but I think there will be changes also, like the so-called Arbeitszimmer, yeah, mm-hmm. At home, yeah, to work at home. There were very strict regulations that only certain types of technicians or like writers, etc., yeah, or when you have like an office as a doctor or lawyer, etc., then you could deduct it. Otherwise, not. But I think that will change. But the laws and regulation have to be amended for that. Yeah. But I expect there will be amendments. Yeah.
And hopefully, I think home office is one of the movements that will stay. And when I look at the money which needs to be invested, we are talking about several thousand euros. So it's for private people and for employees, it's no small amount.
Lastly, there were like fundings for home office investments.
Oh, really?
For instance, by the Wirtschaftsagentur, mm-hmm. There were like a home office funding, yeah. But it's maxed out.
Oh, that's a pity. Yeah. That's a pity. I didn't know about it. Are there any other funding instruments currently available? What did change on that side in 2020?
Yeah, also that's I think the other like development we saw, yeah, because the several lockdowns resulted also in a massive shortage of turnover and losses for the companies. Thus, the government had to take various measures and introduce several instruments to help Austrian companies to withstand the crisis. In the beginning, we recognized that the application for these measures were very complex. I think Michael Kevan could also say some words about that then afterwards. And also we observed that it took often very long to get the funding. Yeah. Or worse, we were not able to apply for certain grants because of exceptions. So with the second lockdown, unfortunately, the second lockdown in December, the Austrian government launched instruments which were easier to handle. For instance, the lockdown turnover compensation or the investment premium. Yeah, that could be very interesting also for the tech and life science sector. I think we will talk about that.
We will talk about it, yeah.
In more detail, yeah. But one thing to say on the downside, because on the other hand side, there's the danger of overcompensation or the funding of companies which were already companies in difficulties before the crisis. So it's also very interesting to see what will be the case when all these fundings and aids are maxed out and the companies have to pay back, especially, for instance, the governmental guarantee loans. Yeah. So I think that could be a big problem because there will be a wave of bankruptcies. And then there will be the question who will pay the bill. So the discussion of new taxes after the crisis, especially with regard to taxes for high net worth individuals, catchphrase inheritance tax, Erbschaftssteuer will heat up, I think. Yeah. So, yeah, we will see how that turns out from a tech side. Yeah.
Interesting points that you brought up. I mean, this topic of zombie companies.
Yeah, zombie companies. Yeah.
I mean, I consult.
Very hard to say. Yeah.
I consult companies for decades now. And my opinion is that the first priority of an entrepreneur, founder, CEO should be to serve the customer. So with tremendous governmental support, it's a very special situation. I have no solution for that. Yeah. Just the only thing I can say is focus on the customer and less on the government. So this is might help maybe. Michael, what did you observe in 2020? What changes did come?
Maybe one thought to that zombie companies and insolvency rates. What we observe now is that the insolvency rates are lower than in previous years. So
really,
that significantly
because of the
lower.
AIDS and
the problem is just shifted probably.
Postpone it. Okay,
the funding helps companies to keep a little bit longer alive than they would have been without the COVID grants and funding instruments, and so it's I would say quite obvious that there will be a wave of insolvencies after these fundings end, and that will be a tremendous challenge. I'm sure, because all the people suffering, jobs getting lost, so that will something in 2021-22 which be maybe an additional wave to that to the COVID crisis that the government has to handle, and then the question is who will pay for that.
That's a good question.
And I think the uncertainties, I think they also led to like the new heights for the crypto assets. Yeah, like maybe bitcoins Bitcoin is the new gold, for instance. Yeah, like very interesting how that turns out. Yeah, if the rise of Bitcoin is like sustainable. Yeah, but I think so. But you're the experts. I'm non-techie and I'm no hardcore investor. But I think the crypto assets are now more common to the public. For instance, you can buy now crypto assets at the post office, and there are more and more trusted players in the community, in the ecosystem, and also in Austria, like Bitpanda. Like they have like today trending topics had this article about the token of Bitpanda, Best, and so on. And Blockbit is also a very trusted player now with tax reporting tools. I think all that, and also the regulations which were introduced in the last years after the crypto winter, because there are many frauds, especially with regard to utility token. I think all that will lead to the sustainable or that crypto or the digital assets are now more trusted to invest in. Yeah, because also I think institutional investors, I think Astrid, you could say something about that as well.
Yeah. Sure, I can.
Astrid, it's your playfield. So,
so now it's not my turn, sort of. So I need to say that, I mean, technologically wise, I always keep saying that Bitcoin is, it was sort of the first cryptocurrency. But I think if many of the other coins that are out there or tokens that have much better functionality would get the attention that Bitcoin had, then Bitcoin would actually soon be out of the top 10 and would be overtaken by many others. Because, I mean, a sort of network confirmation round in Bitcoin takes enormously time. There is super limited functionality on a smart contract level. So there is not much on the technological side that you said, like, you can definitely use it apart from maybe a sort of store of value. But we can discuss that topic independently for hours and hours, you know. Unit account, store value, and all that. I think that if you look from a technological point of view, and this is not investment advice, whatever I'm saying here, there are much better assets out there. I mean, for example, we have invested in Polkadot, which is also an interoperability protocol where really all chains can then transact and exchange data with each other. And we'll see. This year will really be of, the year of Polkadot and Kusama when the parachains will launch there. I think that would be really interesting. And I think if these sort of assets get just the attention that Bitcoin would have, and I mean, I need to say I'm getting really bored of saying like, oh, Bitcoin got another high. Oh, Bitcoin crashed, you know. I'm really super bored about these lines because they don't mean anything. You know, there's just no value tied to it. We're investing in value, right? So we want to see business models that actually work, the technology, how it's really applied, you know, in real life, and how it can actually help to support business, how to, you know, create a better life for people out there. So we're really not at all interested. We follow it. Yes, it's sort of an indicator of things are going. And yes, there have been some notable names that sort of bought up Bitcoin last year. And then obviously, you know, this created sort of this price rally now where also even retail investors got in. And I think this is always a dangerous point in markets, right? When actually sort of people who don't know what they're doing actually suddenly get into a market without any knowledge. And the blockchain market or the crypto market is still nowhere close to maturing. So you need to really focus full time on this area to understand what is actually in there, what can theoretically even work and what can't work. So I'd be careful. So I'm really waiting for the next Bitcoin crash. But if not, I mean, I'm happy for everyone who makes money on it. But as I like, I don't see the point of it, really, to be honest.
That's a good thing. I mean, Bitcoin, I think, has the legacy and gets the marketing and the attention. And there's a lot of very unique and special storytelling evolving around Bitcoin. One story I read is Bitcoin can replace the dollar as reserve currency. So there are many interesting stories, but let's go back to the Austrian tax system. Especially when I think about the people, buying Bitcoin, and one friend of mine said he went in at 400 and now I think it's about 40,000. So it's a tremendous uptake and he's happy to spend the money. Why is it smart to tell this guy, go to a tax consultant like you and get a little bit of advice? What is a tax consultant and what are auditors actually really doing in real life?
Tax consultants, question, Oliver, it's yours.
Okay, yeah. So, I'm into tax compliance. Tax compliance, like accounting and so on. It's not so sexy, but we are working on that it's getting more sexy. Yeah. So for instance, we introduced a accounting platform for KPMG with our partner Abacus, yeah, for our clients, especially for our startup clients, which is part of our KPMG Smart Start compliance package for consulting package for a reduced fee for innovative companies, because we would like to also digital transform our like core activities, yeah, like for instance tax compliance, yeah. What the tool does is that metaphorically speaking, we can handle now the digital shoebox. So in the past, when one of our clients came to us and said, you have to do the accounting bookkeeping for us, it could be that he came with a shoebox with all the invoices in it. And then he said, okay, please draw up the accounts. Yeah. So that was horrible for us as well as for the client. But now there are certain tools which can handle that, because on the one hand side, you can easily upload or scan all the documents through various channels to us in the accounting platform. And the AI, which we developed with our partner, is a self-learning software which recognize these invoices and could draw up the booking entries, yeah, in real time. What's the business case for us is that now with this AI we can reduce our working time for accounting by 50%, and on the other hand side, there is an easement in the process for our clients, yeah, in the tax compliance field, because they can easily transmit their documents, and they can have a talk and very actual reportings, yeah, like for instance daily or weekly reportings. Why is that so important? Because especially now with the COVID-19 crisis, yeah, many companies need their annual accounts very fast or in a timely manner, or they have to have their KPIs in check, yeah. And then there is it's good that you have like a partner like KPMG, which can provide you with these solutions, yeah. On the other hand side, our accounting platform will be developed further. So we are implementing like document workflow with multi-stage document approval workflows, or like a dashboard with especially cash KPIs to get like real-time information about the most important figure like the cash, yeah, now in the crisis, and so on and so on. As we are working on the tax compliance of the future, yeah, so that our clients are happy and we could also handle these tasks very efficient, yeah. So that would be the tax compliance side we are now working on, and then there are like so many special topics now, because very interesting was that in the last year especially in the startup ecosystems, I think there were so many funding rounds, financing rounds, like never before. Yeah. Because maybe also because of the crisis, down rounds and so on. But I think also with, investing in promising companies, which maybe are the winner of the crisis, or like, you have to make investments in companies to get some certain funds, like the COVID startup Hilfsfond, for instance. So we assisted or consulted many companies in the M&A and in mergers and acquisitions and due diligences, and also going abroad. Yeah. Going international. So we have also like, besides the tax compliance, also these special tax inquiries, yeah, which we handle on a daily basis. I also had a podcast with Florian Kandler and Gründer Zünder podcast, I think in September. I think I called it Taxes and Fun Stuff, in meinem Beratungsalltag. So you can, get more insight in like also the fun stories I had in my last 10 years of startup consultancy. They were like really awkward stories, yeah, but also very cool stories and success stories. So maybe you can also get to know this.
When you send me a link to the episode, I can reference it in the description of the podcast.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
One point to what you said about the digitalization of the tax consultants' work. I think it's a good thing. I grew up in the 80s of the last century. So in commercial school, we practiced the old style paper-driven bookkeeping work. It was no fun, I can tell you. And then slowly there was a digitalization wave. And these days, when I look at accounting at many offices, I think it's still in the 80s. So there is not much digital. When I think back at the companies we work with, we still have to scan ourselves with huge scanners, the invoices, transfer them to the tax consultants. I think there is a lot of possibility to automate these processes. How is the status in the industry?
Yeah. I think that's more a problem because now it's so trendy to automate or digitalization of digitalize. Thank you. All the processes, but there are so many solutions for a small part of the processes, which every company would like to have their own product. Yeah, and there's the problem with like the interoperability of all these solutions. Yeah, so it's very hard to have an end-to-end process which is fully automated and digitalized. Yeah, so I think it will get better maybe if then there is a standard like also Industry 4.0 or like the integrating the healthcare enterprises IAE standard, like which combines all these solutions to a one ecosystem, yeah, which can fully operate, yeah, and is easy to handle, yeah. Now it's the problem, yeah. So because you said also the tax advice, it looks like in the 80s, but like we are now in the it's.
I want to spark up the conversation.
Witchcraft now with all the tools, and we have to mix it and blend it together.
The witchcraft, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think that's now the problem, but it's getting better. I think 2-3 years ago, at the beginning, it was more problematic, yeah, because there were some companies also fake it till you make it, like with fake AI. So you trusted that, okay, that's like it fully automates the bookkeeping, yeah. Mm-hmm. But the problem was the AI only worked during the week, and on weekends the AI had its free time.
It's the union. The AI needs a weekend as well. So.
Yeah. So that was the problem. It was only real people made the automatization and digitalization. That's a problem, but it's getting better. There are solutions which we now can rely on and trust on. For instance, our partner Abacus, it's a well-known partner of ours and many tax consultants and companies through all of Europe and so on. It's getting better, and it's the future for us, I think there are certain processes nobody wants to do anymore, like the bookkeeping. You have to more be a consultant or like analyzer of the data material, and you have to set up and handle the process more, and you are the controller more than you now. You are the bookkeeper and so on. Yeah, I think it transforms more our work field. Yeah.
And thinking about last year, I mean, because we were speaking here about auditing again, when we had two really big scandals, one international with Wirecard, the other one was smaller in Austria, but still, you know. So what's actually the appetite for auditors also to include technologies like blockchain that would avoid having sort of a fake book and fake transactions in there?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by the constant stream of dire climate news? Turn that concern into action. Tune in to the Climate Confident podcast every Wednesday morning when I bring you good news and real solutions from the front lines of climate action. Whether you're in business, tech, or just passionate about sustainability, the Climate Confident podcast is your weekly dose of optimism and inspiration. Subscribe to Climate Confident on your favorite podcast platform and start your Wednesday with hope and actionable insights.
Michael, I think it's your playground.
That's true. That's my playground. Wow. Let me try to answer the question from a different starting point. What is auditing about? We are auditing the financial statements of a company and try to understand if the financial statements prepared are in accordance with a specific GAAP. And so we take a focus on the balance sheet and try to understand and try to get information, appropriate audit documentation, to understand if the assets are really existing, if the valuation is correctly done. And on the credit side, we check if the liabilities are completely recognized and the P&L is also an important figure to understand if the situation of the company and the activities of the company during the last year are correctly represented in the P&L and also in the cash flow statement. So that is a quite challenging and interesting task to check these figures, and you have to have a pretty good and very well understanding of the business model of the company. And that is maybe one of the things that didn't work out so well in these scandals that you mentioned. So that is the main task, and you also have to use your common sense a little bit. You have to use the brain, your brain, to understand the situation of the company. So that makes a lot of fun. You take a deep dive into the processes of companies. You talk a lot with people, and that is something that changed in 2020. I'm doing that for 20 years, as I mentioned, and we always are at the client side. That's what we're doing. We're talking to a lot of people. It makes a lot of fun. You get a good understanding, no matter if these guys are working in the, manufacturing or in the accounting department. So you have the broad overview of of what's going on, and then you bring it together and you make your work, and in the end you say, okay, the statements are correct, give a true and fair view or not. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when I started, we were carrying a lot of paper with us in binders. So I think when you observed some people in the subway carrying a lot of bags, then it definitely was an auditor. Then it changed. I would say even 15 years ago, we implemented some data analytic tools. Because at the very beginning, I received a pile of papers, and I was told, okay, to check the figures, which is hardly possible to do that. So, but with the data analytical tools, you can run through these figures, use some routines, and you identify some specific items which are unexpected or not in line with your expectation. And so it started, and one of the good things, referring now to the crisis, is that we are mainly digitalized now in our work, what we are doing. So all the files are e-files. There is no paper work that we have to carry around. Everything is on the computer. And that helped a lot to overcome the situation. And what I learned, what we learned, is to use video conference tools like Teams, like Zoom, like WebEx. We learned together with our clients to exchange documents, to check processes, even in a remote way, which we have never done before. And I was very skeptical at the beginning because sitting next to each other is a benefit. And but it's possible, and I experienced that also auditing in a lockdown situation it works out. If blockchain can help to overcome fraud, I cannot answer that question. I just would say a fraud is always hard to identify. There are some indications, and well, there are now courts or prosecutors addressing the situation and checking what they did and what they should have done, if it was appropriate or not. That's always a challenging task, and it's not the main purpose of an audit to identify fraud. We have to address it if we understand that there is fraud, and we have to specifically ask and consider if there is a risk of fraud. So, but it's not an audit to identify fraud.
I think it's also very important to understand the business model of the company, which is reflected in the statements. So then blockchain would not help if you get the data and the data say maybe via the blockchain it's correct, but maybe it is not reflecting the business model correctly, or like would give a hint that there could be a fraud, for instance, like Wirecard. I think the Washington Post or New York Times, I think
Financial Times,
they made an article like a few years ago, because they said, okay, these kind of figures, they are too good to be true, and then there were like filings of the company, so that they would like to the USA would like to have like an influence on the stock market price of Wirecard via these articles and so on. And the auditor said okay, that must be it, and we trust in the business model of Wirecard, and they are the tech companies and so on. But when you don't, you do not understand the business model correctly, then I think you cannot.
The conclusions are wrong. That's if you don't understand wrong, yeah. then the business model, then you will always face the risk of making a wrong statement, and that's one of the main challenging tasks of our profession. And
I'm coming from the executive side, and I was CFO in many companies, from startup to multinationals to huge corporations. In the special Wirecard case, let's say it was very challenging for an external analyst to identify the fraud. My fallback position when I was in doubt of a company was always the cash position, because this is what I learned. It's challenging to fake the cash position. Why? Because you get bank statements, and banks are the trusted parties. Then you have the auditors who review the statements. And Wirecard did the impossible. So they really faked the bank position. How they did
also
it?
Also, Commerzialbank. Yeah. It's the same, yeah. And that's actually the yeah, that's a little bit of...
I mean, when I come from the executive side to close the loop to the auditing role, I always get the question, what do you want us to do? And my answer is always the same. It doesn't matter if I'm a CFO in a small startup or a CFO in a multinational company. It's always the same. Be my enemy. You need to identify the things that I overlook. You need to challenge me. It's quite simple in a small company. So life science, for example, I mean, usually the auditing talks are more updates on the situation, what we should be aware of. But it's more critical in multinational companies, because when you have to overlook thousands of contracts, thousands of employees, no executive can really dig that deep into every single detail. So they really need the auditors. And my recommendation for the executives in the life science industry is, when you engage auditors, make them your enemy. They need to make you aware of things that you are not aware of if you want to run the business smoothly, because if they don't do it, other people will do it. And most likely, when you overlook something critical, the other people outside the audit process will not be very nice. So this is my recommendation. How do you see the audit role, Michael?
I don't consider myself as an enemy of the client. Mm. I see myself as a person who has the benefit to look on the situation from outside, and what we have to formulate are expectations, and these expectations I can only formulate if I, and I'm coming back, understand the business model and what's going on in the company. Yeah. And if you create an expectation, then you can compare it with the reality or with the thing that is shown in the statements, and you can identify differences. So that's the challenge, and that's the task. And when you're doing that, you always have a Q&A session with the client, because your expectations are maybe different to what they did and what they show. And so that's a process. And at the end of the process, you have to be able to conclude that you obtained, we call it, sufficient appropriate audit evidence to make a statement. And that's the challenge. And it depends upon the risk you identified. So you have to understand the processes, the internal control system. That's quite a lot that you should do. And if we fail auditing some simple stuff like cash statements, then it's a pity, yeah, because that is the basic. And if we're following the rules and what we should do, then it's hardly impossible that something like that happens.
I mean, especially to fake cash positions, or like there are certain rules you have to follow, so, and it would not be so easy to
But as I said, it's obviously a fraud case, and unfortunately, in the past there were was a huge variety of these cases where people were faking some cash positions.
I mean, when I look at the Wirecard case, I think it's not for us to judge. It's the court's job. So they will have to investigate and we'll have to look. But my recommendation is for executives, and maybe also for auditors. I mean, when you see bank statements that are a significant portion of the total assets of a company, like 2/3, maybe it makes sense to board the plane, fly to the bank, and have an interview with the people working at the bank directly. But let's go back to the processes that are currently running. You mentioned already audit processes and tax consultancy processes. I think at the beginning of the year, we are in the midst of kicking off annual reports and annual audits. Is in 2020, due to the corona situation, anything special happening that the company should be aware of?
Yeah, the answer is yes. There is a lot of routines that we had in the past changed. And that is due to the COVID-19 grants that governments are giving to the companies. So one of the issues that changed 2020 is that we will see a lot of receivables mm-hmm. of fundings that are expected. There is a paper of AFRAG which deals with that issue about it. It's called Fachinformation about COVID-19 and the implications of COVID-19 to the audit, to the accounting. And it deals with questions, okay, when can I recognize the receivable of a grant that I expect to receive? What shall I do? How shall I recognize it? So that will change the accounting. And also the grants received or the subsidies received for short-time work, the presentation, that will be something that we have not seen in the past, but we will see in that year. So the presentation is also an important issue. And of course, something that popped up already in the 2019 files was the question of will companies be able to continue as a going concern? Mm-hmm. And that is one of the tough questions to be answered by an executive and also by the auditor. Mm-hmm. Will I be able? And there are some segments, some industries which are heavily impacted. Tourism, event organizers, for example. My experience is that when we're talking about life science companies, for pharmaceutical companies, I didn't experience such a huge change. Okay, they switched to home office, but also my experience is that they were pretty well prepared for that because of multinational companies mainly. So they are used to talk and to discuss issues via video calls or some other tools. So the impact to pharmaceuticals is not that much. What I saw a little bit in the biotech business was that, and that's a little bit contrary to what you mentioned, Oliver, when they were looking for additional fundings, the process was delayed because the shutdown was worldwide. So all these negotiations and due diligence processes that were set up were stopped. And I observed some significant delays, especially when that was funding, which there was abroad or maybe in Asia, where the shutdown was significantly harder than in Europe. So that brought some delays, and of course also COVID brought a huge boost to all companies which are working on SARS or similar viruses. or vaccines. So, a quite broad variety of observations in the life science business. And yeah, and a lot of used the short time work.
I mean, I think the life science business benefited from the situation. On one hand, they got more grants for COVID-related research, which is a good thing because we saw a vaccine coming to the market on emergency use within 9 months, which is astonishing. Amazing. It's amazing. It's really amazing.
I didn't expect that, to be honest.
No, me neither. Me neither. But it really showed and proved what the industry can do when money is not an issue. So what I'm hoping is that we take this philanthropic spirit with us also for other diseases that are really burdens, and money is the issue in the industry. So I think there will be something changing. When I look for the smaller companies that are currently here in Austria, Oliver, I would like to ask you a question. I mean, we were talking about this corona crisis, about these bankruptcy cases. I can also imagine that for the smaller companies, it might be hard sometimes to draw up balance sheets in time. Are there any deadlines that we should be aware of? Is there anything happening right now that companies can benefit from?
So last year, deadline for submitting the annual statements to the commercial register was extended, because usually, for instance, when you have the balance sheet date end of December 2019, you have to submit the statements to the commercial register until the end of September 2020. Yeah? But because of the COVID-19 crisis, this deadline was extended to end of the year 2020. And a few companies and a few clients also submitted these statements at the end of last year, because they had more other stuff to do here, because they have to withstand the crisis. Yeah, so I hope maybe next year it will be also extended again. Yeah, but now it was temporarily. We have to look if it's now on a regular basis. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but on the tech side, maybe to because of the fundings and how to include them in the tax declarations 2020. Maybe it's also interesting.
Sure. This would be the next point. I'm curious, because you mentioned it at the beginning that there are some special grants and tax deduction instruments, tax breaks. What should we know about it?
I have to say that, or admit that most of these fundings are grants which are not repayable, which would be an income, have to be taxable, because that's like an EU regulation, so it have to be taxed with corporate income tax when you have a profit. Could be that you have a loss, but then your losses you can carry forward would be reduced, because on the one hand side it would be tax free, but the for instance the expenses which are connected to these fundings are not deductible. So as a consequence, these fundings would be taxable. There are a few cases where it's not the case. For instance, the investment premium. You get a cashback premium of 7 or 14%, especially in the life science and digitalization sector. You can get up to 14% of a cashback premium.
14.
14.
14. 14.
1-4, yeah. And then we could also talk about it if you can combine it with other fundings or especially with the R&D premium. But standalone, you can get 14% cashback, and it's tax-free, really tax-free, because it doesn't reduce the depreciation of these assets. Yeah. So that would be the loan example where it's tax-free, but otherwise these grants are have to be taxed for corporate income taxes. Yeah.
Did I get it right that the public grants that the companies achieved during the Corona crisis are taxable? So at the end of the year, there's a huge question about accruing these grants. Is that the correct understanding?
Yeah, you have to include it in the tax base. Yeah. So that's the downside. Yeah. It looks that they are tax-free for corporate income tax, but you cannot deduct the expenses, for instance, with the Fixkostenzuschuss, yeah? And so they have to be included in the tax base or reduce your losses you could carry forward, yeah?
That's good to know. You mentioned also the research tax premium. Maybe we can dig a little bit more into that, because it's a speciality in Austria that from my experience, I know sometimes it's challenging to explain to investors who are not in Austria. Can we do a little bit of a theoretical review and overview of that instrument?
Of course. Oliver, you, me?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. Okay, it's
shoot
more.
On and...
I think let's start with one comment that was announced yesterday or the day before by the research premium was used in 2020, or there were requests for the research premium in the by more than 9,700 times, which is the absolute high of all the years, and research premiums in the amount of 1 billion or more than 1 billion was paid in 2020. So I just have also the figures for the previous years, and in 2018, for example, the figures were 800 millions. So there is a huge increase in the demand of the research premium. The reason is, I think, that you receive 14% of funding for your R&D work or experimental development if it's in-house, and there is no limitation. And the benefit is that you get the money in cash. So even if you're a loss-making company, it doesn't matter, you get the money. And that is, from my point of view, one of the main advantages. And also that if it's in-house research work, there's no limitation. Of course, it has to be done in Austria. That is one of the requirements. There are two main streams that you have to follow and to consider. One is you have to file a document to the FFG. And the FFG is performing some kind of appraisal, sending a report, analyzing your R&D work that you have documented in that paper, and approving it. And once you have the approval, then you also get the money from the government, or then it's forwarded to the financial authorities, and you get that approval. So that's very important that in that document where you have to file your R&D work, you are very precise in describing your R&D activities. The main challenge is that it's in German. You have to write it in German. There is also a limitation of characters that you can use. for each project 3,000. And you have to provide all the significant information within these 3,000 mm-hmm. characters. It should be clear what you're doing, that it's a scientific approach. The method has to be described, the content of your R&D work, why it's a novelty. So, because based on that information, the FFG is checking and analyzing your request and improving it. So once you fail with that, you probably will not get the funding that you might be able to get if it's correctly prepared. So that's one of the...
Actually, speaking about research work, I think last year was quite interesting to hear at this event that it's not just what we usually think about lab-based work or experimentation in terms of physics and all that, but there are also software research work that actually falls into this category. Is that correct?
Yes, there is a... There is no such limitation. It's the important thing is that you have to prove the novelty of that research work, and you have to describe the main characters and the scientific work. Oliver, is there anything that you want to add to that question?
I think it's more hard to prove the novelty in contrast to the the standard which is prevailing or on the market, in contrast to life science research and development. I think it would be easier to show the novelty, than for a software company, because it have to be really new, like a new AI, new processes, new software. It cannot be standard software, which is only customized, for instance, so it's a little bit harder to prove the novelty for the R&D premium.
Let's test my rule of thumb. So this is what I used in the last 15 years, and let's see if it's still correct. I always advised talk to a patent attorney and talk to tax consultant. So if anything you can patent, you can put in a patent, has a high chance to succeed also for the research premium. Is that still a correct statement, or are there different assessments?
I would agree with that.
It's a good indication, and also when you get you were granted already innovation grants of the FFG or the RWS, it could be proof or a high indication that you also the R&D premium is applicable.
And one important thing is that it's also here essential that you understand your business model. Because if you're only doing R&D work, there is a huge possibility that a large portion of your expenses are eligible. And that's one of the crucial points that we identified during our tax consultancy work, that it's sometimes not quite clear what you have to exclude and what you can include in the eligible costs. So that is, from my point of view, very, very important to really have a good overview and understanding of what you're doing. And that has also to be accompanied by a good documentation, why you think that this is R&D work. And that's essential, because that is a huge trigger of how much R&D premium you can apply for.
I mean, documentation is key to success. I would like to go back a little bit to software and then to the life science industry. It sounds to me, Astrid, like it makes sense to reach out to people like Professor Wurzer to get an understanding what research in the digital space is and what can be patented, because with statements from from him, probably it increases the probability of getting also for software company to research premiums. How do you see it?
Yeah, so I assume so that, yeah, and as we said, if, you know, one of the criteria is also that novelty is understood in the way that novelty is also in the patent language, then it totally makes sense that maybe one would also have sort of an underwriting or sort of an assessment by an independent third party who says like, yes, okay, this is really novel and inventive and whatnot, to maybe help with that. So is it actually also KPMG that offers these kind of services to help to put together sort of the text to apply to this FFG grant, or is it something that other companies would rather provide? Because I know that there are a lot of like companies out there consulting, actually acquiring grants and helping to write grants and all that.
Yeah, we do that on a regular basis. For instance, we also like issued an article in the Startup Report 2019 of Florian Kandra. It was called Research Premium and its role in fundraising. I could also send you the link, Christian, then afterwards. There we also provide insights what we do in on a regular basis. We also assist companies throughout the application, yeah, especially for setting up this project description, especially with regard to the five buzzwords which are included in the OECD Frascati manual. Yeah, you mentioned, for instance, the novelty, but especially, I would like to point it out as well, there are four other criterias. Especially the uncertainty is also very important, so that you also show that there were challenges and obstacles you have to overcome throughout the process, throughout the R&D. So that would be, for instance, also like a criterion for R&D. Yeah, when you have no obstacles and no challenges, then it would be maybe nothing new. Yeah, and it's already there. For instance, I would like to point out. And we have also like we can also assist to get some safeguards. For instance, we can audit the assessment base of the R&D premium. Michael is an expert in that field, but we can also like apply for a ruling before you start your R&D processes, yeah, to the FFG and to the tax office. So you can beforehand ask these funding agencies if your project in the future would be eligible for the R&D premium, when the R&D premium is like a funding instrument you have to have to start the project. Yeah, so you get beforehand, before you start the very cost-intensive process of R&D, if you're eligible for the R&D premium or not. Yeah, that's maybe also very interesting to know. And last but not least, we do also like R&D premium checks. So we could check the business model or the projects if they are eligible for the R&D premium, and we can also check the assessment base, especially if the costs you would include are applicable for the R&D premium or not, because it could be a problem afterwards, after the application and when the R&D premium is paid out, in a few years, maybe the tax audit, will review the R&D premium in detail, especially the assessment base, and then you have maybe to pay it back. Yeah, that would be a problem. Yeah? So we have a tool set of safeguards and measures which we could provide to the client, as well as we have like a very broad knowledge to also prepare the project description for the application at the FFG, yeah. And we do it also for other fundings, yeah, on a national level and also on a EU level. Maybe you can combine it with the premium, and now with the COVID-19 investment premium, yeah. So we would make a workshop to maybe also not focus only on the R&D premium, but on the whole funding strategy of the company. Yeah, mm-hmm. That would be our approach. Yeah, and yeah, please refer to our article. There is everything at a glance. Yeah, to read it. What you could offer here. Michael Petritz and Michael Gevan and me and our teams, yeah.
I can put the link in the description of the article, and we can also send it via the newsletter system if you send me the article, so we can repurpose it if it helps.
And it's also in English language, yeah. I think it's
that's very beneficial.
One remark to the safeguards. If you're an R&D company with mainly expenses, then tax authorities are checking your R&D premium. That's for sure, because that's the only income from tax authorities that you receive, and they just want to understand if that application of the R&D premium was correctly done, and if the eligible costs are really eligible according to the regulations and directives existing or not. So I think you can be quite certain about the fact that they will audit that. Mm. And it's the same for the COVID-19 grants that you get.
I think this is a very important point to mention, that the advice from a tax consultant and the assessment from the FFG is not final. So the entrepreneur cannot say after these two assessment and checkpoints, yeah, I can throw in all expenses now and get my research premium. The entrepreneurs should expect that there is a real audit coming after a few years, and they are really digging deep. So should be aware of that. Talking about the basis for calculation. Sorry, I interrupted you, Michael.
No, I just wanted to add that the FFG appraisal report just documents that you are conducted based on your documentation that you filled into that formula, that your R&D work fulfills the requirements of the directives and regulations, or is in line with. Doesn't say anything about the eligible costs.
Correct.
That is checked afterwards. So,
talking about the eligible costs, I mean, there is. Once I heard that it was a few years ago, a tax consultant told me you can only add 100,000 euros to the eligible cost. In life science companies, there is always the question, what should we do with research that is not conducted in Austria? I think, for example, vaccine development or drug development. Many animal trials we simply cannot do in Austria because there is no organization commercially available for research companies. So very often when I was an executive in life science companies, I had to engage French companies or German companies to conduct the research, the animal trials. Can I also add these expenses that not occur in Austria into the research premium?
The very famous answer is it depends.
I want a clear, easy to understand, simplified answer.
It depends upon the contract structure, the tasks that you're subcontracting. Who is really doing the R&D work? Mm-hmm. Is it still you doing it in Austria, but you're just subcontracting the let's call it the testing process, and they are not doing the R&D work as described in the rules and regulations? Then it's more likely that it's still in Austria. If it's done by the subcontractor, then you maybe have the situation that you have a subcontracting. And then you can apply for that second stream of research premium for subcontracting work, which is limited to 1 million. But it always depends. And that is one of the interesting things, that when we are asked to analyze the R&D eligible costs, the premium eligible costs and how the calculation is set up, then we take a deep dive into the contracts to understand who is responsible for what, and is there a clear line of who is doing the R&D work and who is responsible for the IT work, who is making the test protocols and so on. And that refers also to the documentation. You need to have a good documentation. And yeah. So
let me try to simplify it for my understanding. So for example, if an investor takes 5 million euros, puts it in a corporate shell in Austria, and all work is contracted with corporations outside Austria, and the shell here in Austria has no employees, most likely there is no real research going on. Whereas in a company like, let's say, Intercell, for example, with 60, 70, 80, hundreds of employees here in Austria who are conducting research on a daily basis, who bring in the brain power, who structure the protocols, who bring the whole development plan together, who also are responsible for failures, who engage an external organization in Germany, France, United Kingdom or Sweden to only execute on single parts of the work, it has a high chance.
This
is a correct understanding.
Yep.
So, but the truth always is in the middle, I guess. So it is really necessary to reach out to.
It's always important to read the contracts. Also, the CRO setup. Who is doing what? Is the CRO also doing an essential part of the R&D work? And once you can exclude that, and you can document that. That should be a reasonable documentation. that is really done in Austria, then it's okay. Mm-hmm. You also have to not forget that not all the companies, subcontracting companies, are eligible. So only those who are in the European Union or the EEA, I think the, was it the EBA in German. Mm-hmm. So if you're subcontracting to the USA, that's not possible to include that in the eligible cost.
What about the United Kingdom? I mean, there is this little thing called Brexit. So.
Little thing called Brexit, yeah.
Oh, no, I can't hear it anymore. I'm half British, true. So.
okay.
Oliver, can you answer that question? I don't dare to answer that question now. I'm not sure.
I think that's so complex. I think in certain areas and certain fields, I think there are not final answers possible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but maybe one point or one pitfall with regard to the Auftragsforschung.
Contract.
Yeah, contract R&D. Research premium. The contractor has to inform the subcontractor until the end of the year, in which the R&D, the contractual work is provided, that he will, or the contractor will apply for the R&D premium. Yeah. So this written message or written information have to be also put into the documentation for further tax audit, because you have to do it until the end of the year, you have to have proof for that. I think often especially startups, SMEs, they forget about that, and then you have to say, okay, maybe we have like an no written agreement, but we talked about that, and now we have a written agreement and we refer to it afterwards. So that is like an requirement you have to met when you apply for the for these kind of research premium, that you have the written confirmation on hand.
That's a good thing. I mean, you mentioned, I think, a keyword, year-end, and all these deadlines that we have to face right now. We are in 2021. It's January. Companies start to draw up their annual statements for 2020. Are there any immediate deadlines that we should be aware of when it comes to grants and the year-end closing process? What's going on right now? What's happening from the government side?
I think when you're asking for immediate deadlines, then one deadline that comes immediately into my mind is the investment premium, mm-hmm. because the deadline for applying for it is the 28th of February. So if you want to apply for that, you have to hurry up, and you have to also set up some initial activities, which are described in the directive, what you have to do in order to be able to apply for that. Mm-hmm. So that's very important.
Maybe like some hidden marketing from my side, because I held lots of webinars with that regard, also where I get more into detail in the investment premium. Mm-hmm. You can write me or send me a message via LinkedIn or via my profile at KPMG, and I can send you maybe also the audience or interested persons the link to the webinars and also more information. And for all we discussed here in the podcast, we would be glad to also offer some initial meetings free of charge. Yeah. To discuss maybe the next steps, especially now with the mentioned investment premium, for instance. Yeah, we have also Excel tools where you can for free, where you can also calculate automatically the investment premium, the fixed cost and zuschuss, etc., yeah, which we can provide. Yeah.
If you send me the links for the webinars, we can do a double strategy so people can reach out to you. And they can also get the links from the description of the podcast and the newsletter I send out. So I think it's another hook point.
Yeah, because we have also a link for all the COVID-19 information and presentation of mm-hmm. all the COVID-19 grants worldwide. Also,
that's good.
In relation to Austria, yeah, which is updated on a regular basis. Yeah, I can send you the link. It's in English language. Yeah.
This would be very great. I think it's very helpful. Are there any other deadlines that we should be aware of? I mean, year-end closing, I think the first deadline I have in mind from the past was May 30, that they should be finished. Then the second deadline, you can extend it to September 30. Is there any extension to be expected also in this year due to the current lockdowns?
Can be expected. It's not announced till now if there is a further extension of these 3 months that Oliver described mm-hmm. just before. I think one deadline which is also interesting is the deadline for filing overdebtedness. So mm-hmm. if your liabilities exceed your assets, then you have to analyze if you are from an insolvency perspective have the situation of overdebtedness, and mm-hmm. normally when you identify that, you have 60 days mm-hmm. and that process was exempted during the whole corona crisis now, and the deadline was now shifted a little bit forward to the end of March mm-hmm. so till that you don't have to file insolvency due to overdebtedness
till the end of March 2021. Okay, so it's even just for my understanding, even if I see in a company a case of overdebtedness which would be have 60 days to file for insolvency, I can wait until March and then have the 60 days.
Yeah, you don't have to file insolvency due to that reason. That is, I think that's a very recent announcement from mm-hmm. that week. I think it was announced on the 5th of January.
Good to know.
And also this deadline, end of March 2021, is also important for the deferral of tax payments and installments, mm-hmm. and also no interests on tax underpayments will be charged. Yeah. This deadline was extended several times, and I think maybe it will be extended in March as well. But we have to wait for that. Yeah, hopefully it's the last lockdown now.
Yeah, we will see. Are there any deferrals? I mean, I think one claim I read on Facebook yesterday from a politician was that the taxes should be lowered to ease the burden on people who are still making a little bit of revenue so that they can reinvest. Are there any tax deferrals possible in 2021? How is the situation? Can we talk a little bit about that? I think this is maybe one of the key points of for companies that are still a little bit in the profitable span. Is there anything going on currently, or is it end of March and that's it?
Oliver, let's talk a little bit about the tax carry backward, mm-hmm. tax loss carry backward. I think that's maybe a little bit addressing mm-hmm. that direction.
Yeah. On one hand side, there are two instruments already in place. For instance, the losses carried backwards. Yeah, it's something very new for the Austrian tax system. You can carry back the 2020 losses to 2019 or 2018, okay. maybe. Yeah. Before that, you only were able to bring forward your tax losses. That's new. And you have also like now a new kind of depreciation. Yeah, you can now make a one-time depreciation of up to 30% of certain investments. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To lower your assessment base, yeah. So that instrument's already in place, and yeah, there's already a discussion ongoing. I think also by the Chamber of Commerce initiated that maybe private investors could also deduct their investments over a time period of 5 years. Yeah, for instance, when you invest 100,000 euro in a company, you can depreciate it over 5 years, and it would lower your personal tax as a private mm-hmm. investor. Yeah, I think that was something already included in the positioning paper of the government. But yeah, we have to see how that turns out. What's also on the table, like several months now, is the startup venture fund, because mm-hmm. the COVID startup use fund is already maxed out. That was a fund with non-repayable grants, only repayable under certain circumstances, is maxed out. But now they establish a COVID startup and COVID in startup investment fund, where the investments of the investors in the fund are guaranteed to a certain degree by the government to give the investors more incentives to invest in startups. So I think that will be also introduced hopefully in the first quarter of 2021.
Sounds to me from the structure like double equity. So an investor invests in a company and the government also co-invests.
Correct.
But it's on the equity side. It's not on the loan side. Did I get the right?
Yeah, it's in the equity side. Yeah, but you said yeah, double equity for loans is also a very hot topic also for startups now. Mm-hmm. I've advised several startups now to get the double equity. Ja, die Überbrückungsfinanzierungsgarantie für KMUs auf AWS, ja. But die Startup Venture Fund is on the equity side, ja.
Yeah. Is the double equity, has it changed a little bit? Because I remember it as a tool for companies that already are on the market or very close to the market. So when I look at the startup ecosystem, many startups are not even close to the customer. Mm. They're working on prototypes. What's the position of the AWS? Did you perceive any changes in your work?
No. It's the same. They have to like a product, yeah, which is on the market. You have to have like at the best first sales and so on, because you have to also convince the AWS that your product or your company will be successful, and you have to also fulfill two milestones to get the two tranches of the double equity, yeah, the loan payments by the bank. Yeah, it could be sales, but it could be also a decrease of negative EBIT. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this instrument would be more for companies. You mentioned Bitpanda, for example. They already have a customer base. So if they make a financing round, this would be something for them. It's just a blunt example. So to make it more.
I was talking about the Überbrückungsfinanzierungsgarantie. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the venture capital fund, I think I don't know the regulations in detail yet. I think they're working on that at the moment. But I think, yeah, these kind of instrument is for scale-ups, yeah, because the COVID Startup Hilfsfonds, they were only eligible or applicable for startups which were not older than 5 years. And okay. For instance, that would not be the case for Bitpanda or TourRadar and so on. And maybe this venture capital fund for startups is now a better option for them if they choose to get this kind of equity, yeah, from this startup hilfsfonds.
And the startup venture fund basically is filled with tax money, I guess, from the government. And the government goes on the equity side. So for the taxpayer, it means that if a company is successful, there is also return into the fund. So it's set up like a venture fund.
Yeah, it's also managed by venture capital funds, which were already established in the Austrian ecosystem. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are so many questions. We have 10:39 right now. What are the last points that we should talk about? I know that you also have other meetings coming up and that you have also other obligations. Did we miss anything, Michael and Oliver, that you would like to tell our audience?
No, I think we addressed all the most significant and main points. I just want to draw the attention to that AFRAG Fachinformation when it's about considering accounting issues for 2020, how to account for receivables related to grants received, how to evaluate that. May I do have to set up a provision because I may have doubts that some of the money received has to be repaid. So that is a very good paper. And in case you have questions, you just easily can contact me. And I think, Christian, you will provide the LinkedIn data.
Definitely.
How to access our profiles. Everything that is related to audits, to accounting issues, you can easily address. Any question to me, and also if it's about the research premium, I think we have a lot of experience in that area, especially also in the life science industry. So we can share our experience, and we are happy to share that.
Yeah. And from my side, yeah, if you have like questions with regard to funding, especially COVID-19 funding, as well as like digital transform your tax compliance, yeah. I'm happy to assist. Yeah. Please write me via LinkedIn or my profile. And yeah, I would suggest that you take immediate steps to evaluate if some COVID-19 funds are applicable or not, because there are like tight deadlines and limited funds you have to take into account. So I would be happy to assist you to make a high level analysis in a initial meeting free of charge.
And please don't forget that the application for the investment premium ends end of February 2021. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty soon. And so if there are any questions, please just ask Oliver or me, and we are happy to help.
Astrid, any final words? Astrid, any final words from your end?
No, I think I've learned a lot today, and I hope also our listeners that it's well worth to really talk to a tax advisor and optimize on that front, because there seem to be so many schemes going around and very different deadlines, and it's really totally worth booking a session with Michael and Oliver and his colleagues. So it's great having you on the show. Thank you very much for that.
I completely agree to you, Astrid. When in doubt, always reach out as an entrepreneur to the right experts, ask questions. And with Oliver and Michael, I think we have two of the best tax experts in Austria in our network. Have a great day and goodbye.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Please share the podcast and make sure you've subscribed. Have a great day.